NPR.
This week, more than 2 million people in Houston were without one of life's basic necessities. They were without clean water. A power outage at a water treatment plant left the city under a boil water notice on Sunday. And just this past summer, a different boil water notice, this time in Jackson, Mississippi, left thousands of people there without safe tap water for almost 7 weeks.
Jackson is telling us what's coming for all of us.
This is Alex Loukopoulos. He's a water infrastructure investor, and he had this dire warning at a recent water conference at Columbia University.
We can look at Jackson, Mississippi, and feel bad for them, or maybe make fun of them, or say, that's not me. But the United States really has to wake up and say, Jackson, Mississippi is the canary in the mine.
Yet the Magnolia State is more than a warning for our nation's bleak water future. It may also hold the secret for how to avoid it.
This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Darian Woods.
And I'm Stephen Bissaha from the Gulf States Newsroom. We're a happy family of public radio stations in Alabama, Louisiana, and Mississippi.
And today on the show, two opposite approaches for dealing with water infrastructure problems in the U.S. from two Mississippi men.
One is using teamwork to deliver clean water in one of the poorest parts of the country.
And the other is a vigilante plumber on a quest for water independence.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify. Finding sales sluggish? Discover Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Customize your online store to your brand. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/indicator.
Nearly 2 years ago, this historic winter storm caused water pipes to freeze and burst and left millions of people without safe tap water in the South. In Jackson, Mississippi, the water is out for more than 3 weeks.
But one water utility in the Mississippi Delta managed to keep the water pumping while some of its neighbors' pipes were dry. This was the Black Bayou Water Association.
Not to brag, but Black Bayou didn't lose water pressure.
You can brag a little bit about that.
Well,
that's David Cohen. He's Black Bayou's general manager. I went to visit David at the time because when I called around to find someone doing something right in Mississippi with water, I was told to talk to him.
And that's a bit of a surprise because the Mississippi Delta is one of the poorest parts of the country, and this part of the Delta where David is based has a reputation for brown water.
Yeah, David pulled out his phone to show me what looked like black sludge being extracted from the water at his new treatment plant.
Here, let me show you the little video.
I mean, that looks like sewage to me.
Yeah, well, it's actually, that's organic coloring. That's great fertilizer.
Right, so this extract would make pretty good fertilizer, but it's not really something that I'd want in my tap water.
Right, it's safe to leave it in there and drink, but that doesn't mean you'd want to do it. Cleaning this water required building that new treatment plant, which cost roughly $2.5 million. How do you pay for something like that?
You've hit on the question that you come here to hear now. Profits increase with numbers.
Specifically, the number of customers. And while that might not sound revolutionary on its own, it's part of this big economics concept, economies of scale. So the bigger a company, or the bigger a water provider in this case, that can mean more efficiency.
Well, it's much more economical. Instead of building these people a tank, and these here come right in between and build one.
Well, now you're sounding like a Wall Street CEO talking about mergers.
Yeah, well, that's what it is.
The flip side is that smaller utilities can be less efficient. And this problem of tiny water providers is actually a pretty big problem here in the United States. While places like the UK can count their water providers in the dozens, the US has more than 50,000 water providers.
Yeah, and Black Bayou, when it started in the 90s, used to be one of those really small water providers. David had, at the time, just 350 customers. So to get those economies of scale, David relied on something we all learned in grade school, teamwork.
David convinced his neighbor utilities, which were even smaller than his, that they'd all be better off if they joined forces. everyone would come together under the Black Bayou name. And David was so convincing that he ended up with 8 times as many customers. And partnering together a bunch of these small water systems has really paid off for Black Bayou's customers. And that also includes David.
For a demonstration, David turned on his kitchen faucet and filled up a glass with crystal clear water.
You drink it just like this?
I drink it just like that, just like this. Yeah. Yeah, that's the way I do it.
And beyond cleaning the water, Black Bayou was able to use those savings to invest in more reliable infrastructure, which helped keep the water flowing during that winter storm 2 years ago.
And the Environmental Protection Agency and lots of water advocacy groups would probably say that's not really a surprise. They have been pushing for this type of water consolidation.
Of course, we should mention some of the problems consolidation alone can't solve. A big one being that Black Bayou's water is actually more expensive than other utilities here in the Delta. Even with those economies of scale, water is still an expensive business, and to do it right, David says we just got to pay more.
You know, Mississippi needs to wake up. We have had cheap water for years and years.
About 100 miles away from David and closer to Mississippi Center, Richard White agrees that water doesn't get the attention it deserves. But he is not on the consolidation bandwagon. In fact, Richard says a water partnership isn't working for his small town. Richard is the mayor of Byram, Mississippi, and that's a small suburb just outside of Jackson. He's also the owner of a local auto shop, and on occasion, he is a plumber vigilante.
So this is the deal right here. This is where I came the other night. This is 110, and let's take a look at it, okay?
Richard showed us this new brick house with a muddy mess in the front yard caused by a leak at the water meter box. Richard says it's actually illegal for him to touch the water pipes laid here. And that's because his town's merged with the city of Jackson when it comes to water infrastructure. And Jackson, it's the one in charge here. That means it owns the pipes and it's responsible for fixing the problems.
But here's the issue. Jackson's water system is still underfunded. It has problems maintaining the infrastructure just in its own city limits, let alone in Byram. Those promised economies of scale haven't been enough to close the water budget gap. So when Richard got the call about the leak in front of this house going on for 5 months, he came here at 8 p.m. with his slip joint pliers, and he fixed it himself.
And somewhere along the line, I went down on my knees.
Covered in a lot of mud?
I knew it was going to be nasty, but this is just not acceptable.
So Richard wants out of the partnership with Jackson and for a city to have its own independent water system. He's betting his small town can do a better job alone.
We're going to have 4 wells and 1 tank.
That's how much would that cost?
About $26 million.
Pretty small town. $26 million sounds like a lot of money.
It is. But right now, there's a lot of money out there that you can use.
And he's right. There is a lot of money out there right now. Mississippi should receive more than $400 million for water infrastructure improvement from the federal infrastructure bill.
Still, while Richard may have this option, as we mentioned earlier, water advocacy groups and the EPA all point toward the opposite solution, consolidation.
But that requires trust. And it requires a belief in the benefits of sharing the fate of your water with somebody else. And as we can see with the U.S. and its more than 50,000 water providers, that belief is still a tough sell. This episode was produced by Brittany Cronin and it was engineered by Catherine Silver. It was fact-checked by Sierra Juarez and Dylan Sloan. VLA is our senior producer. Kate Kincannon edits the show. The Indicator is a production of NPR.